I call this meeting of the House Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. Let it be known we do have quorum. First item on the agenda today is we are going to approve the March 3rd minutes. Can I seek approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Co-Chair Howard moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, I couldn't vote, so I need you to carry that. All right, we'll move to our first item on the agenda today, which is House File 3600. Representative Perryman, if you want to make your way to the front. The first bill today, House File 3600, is a community land trust bill, and this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. But with that, I'll let Representative Perryman introduce their bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. I am remiss. This is my first time in the committee, and I did not bring treats. So I'll have to send some over sometime with Lori or something, but I'll make them very extra special, I promise. So, members, today I'm speaking very excitedly about House File 3600. It modifies a competitive selection process for certain development programs to include community land trusts. House File 3600 provides up to 5% additional bonus points from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for cities and townships that establish community land trusts. Minnesota Housing Finance Assembly would give a greater consideration for their competitive development programs to local jurisdictions that establish these land trusts. Community land trusts are a viable solution to building affordable housing in which land is held in trust for community benefit while homeowners purchase and build equity in their homes. Community land trusts are often seen as a win-win because the stakeholders gain equity via real estate and the homeowners gain equity through the housing market and value of their individual home. Many Minnesota households are locked out of home ownership to rising home prices. As neighborhoods grow and property values increase, lower and middle class income households are often priced out. Community land trusts reduce the upfront costs by separating land ownership from the home, making mortgages more affordable. Community land trusts preserve mixed income neighborhoods and allow long time residents to remain in their communities. This is pretty much the topic of the bill. It's to incentivize people to build at an affordable price and having equity into their communities by building a tool in the box, per se. And that is my bill, HF 3600. I believe we have one testifier on Zoom.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. We will go to our testifiers. First up will be Jeff Washburn, if you're with us virtually.
I am. Thank you to the co-chairs, committee members, and Representative Perryman. My name is Jeff Washburn. I am the administrator for the Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition. And prior to that, for over 20 years, I served as the executive director for the City of Lakes Community Land Trust in Minneapolis. There are 14 community land trusts in the state of Minnesota. Many of those organizations have been around for the better part of 20 years. There are fourteen community land trusts, seven in the metro area and seven in greater Minnesota, covering 82 of the 87 counties here in the state as of today. There are 1,800 or more at this point in time community land trust properties across the state, and community land trusts have facilitated over 775 resales to date. I'm pretty sure this makes Minnesota the state with the greatest number of affordable home ownership community land trust units in the nation. And part of that is due, actually a great part of that is due to the state's investment in community land trust homes over the last 20 plus years. Just over the last 12 years, I did some calculations. The state of Minnesota has invested over $106 million in affordability and development gap investments into community land trust homes across the state. And those dollars have been leveraged many times over with other levels of funding sources from local government, as well as individuals through the mortgages that they take out in purchasing those homes. In addition to the funding resources that come through the state, the Housing Finance Agency has been phenomenal over the last 25-plus years in providing first mortgage loans for community land trust homes. So community land trust homeowners can also access conventional mortgage products, but the state has been one of the reasons in their mortgage financing that has made community land trust ownership in the state so productive for such a long period of time. For the members who aren't familiar with the community land trust approach, all the community land trusts in Minnesota utilize an appraisal-based resale formula, which basically says that the homeowner receives a portion of any increase in value based on the difference from the time that they purchase their home to the time that they sell. The other portion of the increase in value stays with the property and keeps that home permanently affordable for the next buyer household. So essentially what the land trust does in the first transaction is bridges the difference between what a household can get a mortgage for and the cost of the property. That amount has typically and traditionally amounted to about 20 to 50% of the overall purchase price of the property. In exchange for this investment, what we call this gap that we invest in helping low, moderate income buyers get into home ownership, they agree to, in exchange for this assistance, they agree that if and when they go to sell, the home will be sold to another income qualified household. And there'll be a resale formula restriction that's put into place to keep that home affordable without having to invest new affordability gap dollars down the road. So it's a way to take a one-time investment and ensure that it helps multiple generations of buyers achieve their goal of home ownership. It's worked really well in the state. And again, through the investments of the state, this has been possible over the last 20 plus years. A key component to land trust home ownership is this idea of stewardship. So not only are we taking care of the folks that buy homes and supporting them through their home ownership journey, but we're also stewarding those properties to make sure that they're taken care of and they can be around as long as possible. And then lastly, serving as stewards to those affordability investments made in the property, again, to ensure that the state and other public sector entities, when you put the dollars in, not only are we helping the first household achieve home ownership, but we're helping multiple generations achieve home ownership without having to put new public investments into those properties. As you all are aware, we continually lose ground on affordable housing and access to affordable housing in our communities. And the community land trust is one of those approaches that I think is starting to slowly, very, very slowly, but slowly being able to create a permanent stock of affordable housing in our communities. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Washburn. Is there any members from the public that wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Well, Co-Chair Howard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ego. Thank you, Representative Perriman. I appreciate creativity, and because we need to be thinking new ideas in housing and finding ways to support community land trusts. It's a good model, and I appreciate it. I'm not sure if you've talked with the Housing Finance Agency yet. I know they don't love the idea of the legislature directing how they do scoring, although to be fair, that's exactly what Co-Chair Niga worked on and did last year. I appreciate the bill and the intent of how do we, reinforce this good model, but just would encourage you to connect with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency on your bill and get their feedback and work with them.
Chair, Representative, I do want to continue this speaking with the Minnesota Housing Finance, especially about the bonus points and the 5% and where we can really use this tool to help get younger people into homes, because I will say the average age I'm hearing buying their first home is 40. That's pretty. When I was 40, I was probably ready to go into a nursing home, but no, just kidding. But we really want to get young people into homes. So I thank you, Representative, for those comments.
Seeing no further comments from members, I just want to make a few. Thank you, Representative Perriman, for bringing this bill to committee today. I personally love this program. I had the opportunity over the summer. City of Grand Rapids did a wonderful partnership with the Itasca County HRA to build out a community land trust at the site of one of our old elementary schools in Grand Rapids. And I just want to take some time to share with the committee what I saw when I was touring that site. And I ran into so many people I knew from so many different aspects of our community. I was there with members of private banks. I was there with local contractors, local union members. local nonprofit leaders who had all worked together with a vast coalition of people to bring affordable homes to Itasca County and specifically Grand Rapids. I even got to meet with one of those prospective new owners who had just purchased a home, who is a 20-year military veteran, who this opportunity in a community land trust gave him the opportunity to move home to the community he was from. And that's some powerful stuff. And when you look at how these partnerships are created, I think they're a great way in how this committee talks a lot about how we can have public-private partnerships and really bring about good in our communities. Community land trusts are a way to do that. So I think this straightforward bill of kind of saying, you know, points given where points are due is a good way to start looking at it. Chair Howard and I made that move last year. So I would encourage the conversation to continue with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and see how we can move this project forward. But with that, Representative Perryman, any closing thoughts?
Thank you, Chair and members. I couldn't have said it better, but you used real life stories in your own area. But it is a program that can be used by all, young, old, everyone, teachers. It'll put some equity into people wanting to have children early too and have homes for their children. When your parents need to move into somewhere, it's a home. And we all know home is where the heart is. That's kind of corny, but that makes a big difference than having to live in an apartment at 25 with three kids running up and down the hallway. So thank you for hearing this. I will continue to work on it with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and it's a great bill, and I appreciate that you all heard it today.
Thank you, Representative Perryman. With that, House File 3600 is laid over. Next on the agenda will be House File 3809. Vice Chair Dotseth, if you want to make your way to the front, I'll give you a chance to get settled before we make any further motions. Vice Chair Dotseth, would you like to move House File 3809 to the Judiciary Committee?
I would like to move to Judiciary. Thank you.
To your bill.
Thank you. Say that five times really fast, huh?
Yeah.
thank you, members. I'm here to speak on behalf of it's more of a correction bill is what we've got in front of us today. However, with this, we actually do have bipartisan support. Each House File 2809 is a requirement of expedited eviction process is modifying the process. Everyone deserves to be safe at work, and that includes all the people that work around apartments. House File 2809 is a bill for apartment worker safety that would protect maintenance workers, property managers, landscapers, postal workers, and visitors to the properties. Under current law, if a resident of an apartment building engages in behavior that seriously endangers the safety of another resident or housing provider or guest, the housing provider can file for an expedited eviction process in order to protect other residents. But right now, if a resident endangers the safety of anyone on the property other than residents of that property, housing providers cannot file for an expedited eviction process action. Evicting that person can take weeks, sometimes months. During that time, workers may feel too unsafe to come to work, or may even quit and not come to work at all. There's already a shortage of workers, property managers. We can't afford to lose quality staff because of preventable safety measures and concerns. House File 2809 fixes the issue by allowing housing providers to file for an expedited eviction process. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, our Vice Chair Dotseth. With that, we'll move into testifiers. Looks like our first one's already up there. So if you want to introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Kathy Bennett. I'm the Executive Director of the Twin Cities Housing Alliance. The Twin Cities Housing Alliance represents more than 100 housing providers across the Twin Cities, including nonprofit, for-profit developers, owners, and property managers. Our mission is simple. Build more homes to increase affordability for all and protect the homes that we have so they remain safe, secure, and well-maintained. We support House File 3809, which improves the expedited eviction process by expanding protection from threats and harm to not only residents, but also property staff, supportive service providers, and visitors to rental housing. Our housing system is under real strain. property management staff are increasingly expected to act as social workers, first responders, crisis managers, often with limited training and support. Staffing levels are low, morale is down, and turnover is high. In many cases, owners are installing 24-hour security just to keep staff safe so they can do their job to serve residents. One of the biggest challenges they face is the inability to move individuals who pose a serious threat when the victim is not a resident. I'd like to share two brief stories from our members. First, a renter at a newer state-funded affordable housing property in St. Paul told us she was grateful for her affordable home but frustrated that problem tenants were allowed to stay. She said these situations make residents and their guests feel unsafe and undermine the community she expected when she moved in. At another state-funded affordable property in Edina, a resident held a non-resident hostage with a knife. Police de-escalated the situation, but an emergency eviction was denied because the victim was not a resident. Months later, that same individual intentionally set fire to an elevator, forcing evacuations and damaging 12 affordable housing units. These stories make clear the expedited eviction law needs a targeted update. We urge the committee to advance House File 3809 to ensure safe and secure housing for residents, workers, and visitors alike. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list will be Ron Elwood.
Thank you, Chair Igo, Chair Howard, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and we represent, of course, clients who are in eviction hearings. I want to thank Representative Dotseth and Ms. Bennett and Mr. Bagnoli for their willingness to work with us on this bill as it moves forward. We appreciate the thrust of the bill, and we just want to ensure that their language is tight and there are no unintended consequences. So I just want to thank all you folks for the willingness to continue to work with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. Next on my list will be Melissa Taphorn via Zoom. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Igo and Chair Howard and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County Community Development Agency, and I also serve as the Legislative Chair for Minnesota NARO, or the Minnesota Chapter of the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, representing 150 housing and redevelopment authorities across the state of Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to join you remotely today from Washington, D.C., where we're advocating for federal resources for housing right now. And our organization supports House File 3809, which would extend the expedited eviction proceedings law to cases of violent behavior and serious threats towards staff, vendors, and guests, in addition to other residents. Housing and redevelopment authorities own and operate a variety of rental properties. We have talked with you largely about our public housing portfolios in the past, but we also own non-federally subsidized housing. And combined, we estimate that HRAs own over 35,000 rental homes throughout Minnesota. As property owners and managers, HRAs have a responsibility to provide a safe living environment for our residents where they feel physically and emotionally safe. And we vet applicants for occupancy like all other housing providers do. HRAs generally are more likely to work with applicants who have challenging backgrounds, such as poor credit or rental history. And we don't automatically reject applicants with questionable backgrounds, but look at the context of the situation. And sometimes those background checks are clean and behaviors come up after the resident moves in. And I want to share a story with you, and I'm a little hesitant to do that just because I don't want to reharm the victims in this story. But I think it is an example of criminal acts committed in one of my senior apartment buildings against a non-resident. So I'm going to read a portion of a public statement from law enforcement. On June 30th, 2025, Washington County Sheriff deputies were called out to an apartment complex for a report of a minor female in distress. Upon arrival, deputies found a 14-year-old girl clearly under the influence of drugs. Based on the initial questioning and circumstances surrounding the incident, investigators from the East Metro Human Trafficking Task Force were called to conduct further investigation. Task Force investigators learned that the 14-year-old was picked up in Minneapolis and brought to the apartment where it is alleged she was given drugs and sexually assaulted by two men. Investigators watched surveillance videos, video showing multiple incidents of the suspect bringing females in various intoxicated states to the apartment over the prior weeks. Investigators identified one man as the suspect who would transport the juvenile females to the apartment occupied by our resident. And our resident was charged with two counts of criminal sexual conduct and a third degree in jail. We served him a 30-day notice, and absent that incarceration, involuntary leave, it would have been really helpful to have this expanded criteria to expedite that process. Would further add that we are experiencing challenges in attracting and retaining property management and maintenance staff. And we used to make sure that they had good customer service and financial management skills, but now we focus on conflict resolution abilities and train on de-escalation techniques. We recognize housing workers that as essential workers during the COVID pandemic, and asked, while we were asking them to risk their lives by being in other people's homes, if we could define them as essential, then we should define them as essential and worth protecting now. In talking with our property management team, I learned of a situation where a resident looked up her property manager online and threatened that manager's daughter by name and what school she was attending. I know a few of you can also imagine having to go back to work every day with someone that did that to you. Housing all Minnesotans is a strategic priority for all of us, and housing is not possible without the management and maintenance staff that keeps our housing open and running. This bill restores the right to basic safety for everyone in our housing. So thank you, Representative Dosseth, and the other authors for bringing this issue forward, and to committee members for your time and consideration of House File 3809, which we believe allows us to provide a safe living and working environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Next on the list will be Brandon Englum. Please unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Brandon Englum. Thank you to the co-chairs, members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity to come forward today in support of House File 3809. Which, as we've been talking about, would slightly modify the expedited eviction statute. So I'm general counsel to the Housing Authority of Minnesota, and I do all of our legal work when it comes to evictions and recapturing of real property in our various programs. And I can say with some certainty that over the last 5 years that I've been with the agency, our most volatile cases that we get find themselves in a very narrow period of time, right? It's that time period when someone's been filed on, when they get their official notice that they are going to be going to court, is when you get a lot of the big reactions, the big emotional outburst or risk of harm to property or persons. And this targeting of the statute, in most contexts, probably won't see a lot of use because this lever is kind of pulled infrequently in our experience, but it tightens up the timeline for service of process and the court's process. It doesn't alter your notice obligations under the statute, right? So no one's being shortchanged notice that they're being evicted, but it just helps the administrative process kick in a little bit faster. And we think that that actually really narrows the risk of someone having that additional time to spiral if they are denying services or rejecting services and are truly in crisis but are not willing to engage in a kind of constructive way to deal with that. I think of an example early on in my time with the Housing Authority. So we administer Section 8 on top of all the properties we own. And I remember getting frantic calls from one of our community partners in relation to an individual who was disconnecting from all of their support services and who was armed and who was posting these threats, these photos of themselves writing on the walls, talking about how they were going to get this nonprofit's staff and how he believed that there was a grand conspiracy to displace him. And it was terrifying. For not just that nonprofit, but also for our agency, concerned that he may turn his ire towards the Housing Authority administering his voucher, even away from his a direct landlord. And so I think just narrowing the time period to secure that property in those extreme cases, which we think are quite rare. In my 5 years of the Housing Authority, we filed maybe two that were expedited procedure cases. You can't get it wrong, right? The court will punish you. You'll be punished if you file an expedited case and it's not satisfactorily, urgent enough in the court's eyes. And so there is a safeguard against abuse in the statute that we have seen used. And so we think this is a very intelligent way to go about ensuring that property managers, staff, or contractors on site are better guarded against harm in the workplace that they really shouldn't be subject to without shortchanging tenants, their basic due process rights under the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Englund. And last on my list will be Laura Russ. If you want to unmute yourself and state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you for having me. My name is Laura Russ. Good afternoon, Chair Igo and members of the committee. I am with AON. AON is a nonprofit affordable housing provider based in Minneapolis with several thousand homes across the Twin Cities area. Since 1986, AON's been dedicated to creating and preserving affordable homes and providing stability and support to those who need it most. I'm testifying in support of House File 3809, allowing expedited eviction when dangerous behavior threatens the safety of people on a property. These protections are critically important, not only for residents, but also for the employees, vendors, guests, and service providers who regularly come into our communities. Affordable housing properties are active environments where many people interact daily. Property staff working on site, maintenance vendors performing repairs, and social service partners providing support to residents. At AON, we've experienced a number of incidents where this change would have made a difference. Staff, in those situations that can be dangerous, staff become concerned about their safety when reporting to work. Vendors may refuse to perform essential maintenance, and social service providers may become hesitant to enter the property to support residents who rely on them. One example, we had a resident at a property expose himself to a social service provider who then was very reluctant from returning to the site again. Residents often come to us confused and frustrated about why we cannot act more quickly to address serious safety concerns. Allowing this change to ensure dangerous conduct does not impact the property would help housing providers ensure that we can respond swiftly when safety is at risk. It's an important tool to protect the entire community, including residents, employees, guests, vendors, and service providers, who must be able to safely access the property. For these reasons, as a nonprofit affordable housing provider committed to safe and stable communities, we urge you to pass this important legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Seeing no further testifiers on my list, is there any members from the public that wish to testify? Please make your way to the front and introduce yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director with Homeline. Generally, Homeline thinks that the eviction process is too fast. When there's a possibility that someone could lose their home or the timeline is shortened, we think that we should act cautiously. We're not saying that there isn't a middle ground, but we want to make sure that we're really paying attention to what happens to guard the rights of the people that are accused. If this language could be narrowed somewhat, so that we know what persons on the property means and provides more direction, we're open to hearing about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Seeing none, I'll make Representative Kozlowski. Vice Chair Kozlowski, sorry.
Thank you, Chair, and Vice Chair Dotseth, for your work on this. And I know I've had a number of conversations with different folks, including our HRAs across the state and others. I think I shared concerns around the language being overly broad, as was brought by Homeline. You know, when we step back and look at the policy, I understand that this is going to have another stop in judiciary, and so that work will keep happening. But for me, you know, potential unintended consequences, as we've heard with it being overly broad, we've also seen, you know, weaponized racial profiling. Another area is the eviction going on the record for potentially years. It's also my understanding that if you get an eviction, that you could lose your housing voucher. And so just making sure that we're taking very seriously before we pass something like this, you know, folks need support and not to be dumped into the street, and balancing that with, we've seen, as we've heard the stories about, you know, egregious harms being done. And so I think there's a way to find a balance there and find some middle ground to have protections against egregious and repeated attacks on our workers, whether it be our public postal workers or folks who are just trying to go about their day and provide housing. So I would like to see some guardrails tightened up around this. And then, frankly, I was actually wondering if Ron Elwood from Legal Aid would be willing to come back up. If that'd be okay, Chair?
Elwood, looks like he's making his way to the front.
Great. Thank you. Most of you had mentioned that there's an amendment coming forward, and I'm really eager to understand more what would be in that amendment. Would you be able to detail for us what we could expect to see in the judiciary stop?
Mr. Elwood.
Chair Igo and Representative Kozlowski, I think we're looking at ensuring that the folks with protecting property management, landlords, that's one folks who should be specifically identified in the legislation, because they're also at risk and people could be threatening them. Just want to make sure, though, that the you know, what is the standard for the eviction, making sure that there's some you know, there's an imminence danger, you know, weapons, things like that. And just I think there needs to be specificity to the and the thrust of the bill is I don't think anybody argues with the thrust of the bill. I mean, of course we need to protect not only the other tenants but also property managers, staff of the landlords, and the landlords themselves.
Vice Chair Kozlowski.
Thank you for that, and for spelling it out. And I appreciate the specificity, you know, and engagement of property managers and tenants alike. We've seen these instances. I came from working at a city before I came to the Capitol, and we saw it with our library workers. We hear it from nurses and whatnot. But again, just around, we heard the story of, like, trafficking. And so putting some guardrails around it, making sure we're protecting against unintended consequences. And just for you, Vice Chair Dotseth, I was curious, just my understanding of this bill is that we'll have the chairs working together once we have a vote out of the committee and send this on to judiciary. But if you would be committed to working with Homeline and Legal Aid to ensure that the amendments are brought forward and that we get that tenant engagement as well.
Vice Chair Dotseth.
Chair Kozlowski, I would most certainly be willing to. Also, just to give you a little peace of mind, anyone that files a claim would also have to be filing a sworn affidavit as well on their claim and the facts that are there. So I think that gives you a little bit of clarity on that, those concerns too. But yes, I'd love to work with you.
Thank you.
Next, I'm going to listen to you, Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thank you, Representative Dotseth, for bringing this bill forward. I am a co-author on the bill because I do think in general that this is a gap in our current statutory scheme that needs to be addressed for the safety of folks on the premises. You know, I also understand the concerns that folks like Mr. Elwood have raised and the need to, you know, I think, as he said, everybody generally agrees that this is the right thing to do, but the devil is in the details on getting this right. You know, it gives me some heartburn to send this out of housing without having worked on that amendment already. you know, so I guess, you know, I'd really be looking for your commitment to get this in a shape where everybody can support it by the time it makes its next stop in judiciary. And I guess that would be my ask as a co-author on the bill, that you work diligently with all the different stakeholders to get those details hammered out and get this in a place everybody can feel good about.
Representative
Vice Norris, Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair Igel. Representative Norris, I would be more than happy to work with you on that. Absolutely.
All right. Last on my list will be Co-Chair Howard.
Thank you, Co-Chair Igel, Representative Dotseth, and testifiers. I do share some of the concerns just about wanting to make sure we don't have unintended consequences, particular around just the definition of persons on the premises. And I'm curious, just a scenario, Representative Dotseth, you know, sometimes someone comes on a premises and a visitor or someone else, and they're the aggressor of some sort of interaction that happens with the with someone that's living there. And, you know, I would share a bit of a concern that some sort of altercation happens and it's the tenant that's there that's not the aggressor, but he's part of some sort of incident, or he or she is part of some sort of incident, and this could be used. I mean, am I correct that that's not really the intent here of the bill, that it is more so to protect if a tenant is the one who's sort of the aggressor, that is seriously endangering the safety of a staff person or a worker or someone that's on premises?
I believe that'd be thank you, Chair Igel. I believe that'd be a safe assumption.
Then thank you, Representative Dotseth. I mean, so in my mind, that's just an example of why I think a little tighter language and some and work is necessary in the bill. I think you're hearing from some of our members some apprehension. I think you'll probably see some no votes today, but probably a bill that's moving on to its next stop. I think I will be a no vote for today. And just level setting for the members of the public and the community about traditionally how landlord-tenant bills become law in the legislature, at least how they have in recent sessions, is that, you know, the Housing Committee has often been a first stop to send bills to judiciary where they can get a hearing there. But ultimately, it's often the Housing Committee that's working together as a committee to come up with a bill, large, small, medium, what have you, of landlord-tenant items. And I hope that more work can be done on this bill. With more work, I think I could be comfortable potentially putting this in some sort of a landlord-tenant bill that moves forward this year, but it's not there just yet. In my estimation. So thank you for bringing the forward bill forward. Thank you for those that have testified, and there's more work to do.
Thank you, Co-Chair Howard. I'll make some closing comments. Appreciate you, Vice Chair Dotseth, for carrying this bill and bringing it forward today. You know, we talked a lot about in this committee about how everyone deserves to have a home. Everyone also deserves to feel safe at home. And that's really at the core of what this bill is all about today. Sounds like there's some good work that's going to needed to be done. But I think that's why it's heading to the next committee of jurisdiction, where we can actually have judiciary and civil law make sure that we iron it out just right so it fits into our statute to protect people across the state of Minnesota in their homes. So those are my closing comments, but I will defer to you, Vice Chair Dotseth, for any closing comments on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Igel. I think it's a good common sense bill, and I think it really allows some safety features that will make residents and workers feel safe. Encourage a yes vote.
With that, Vice Chair Dotseth renews his motion to refer House File 3809 to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And the bill is on its way to the Committee on Judiciary and Civil Law. Thank you, Vice Chair Dotseth. Our last bill on the agenda today is House File 3608. Representative Myers, I'll let you get up there before we proceed. Representative Myers, House File 3608 is in front of us here today. We'll be laying this bill over, but to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Igel, as well as Chair Howard and committee. You know, we're tasked here on finding more ways to address housing options, and some of those are also affordable housing options, and that is why I'm bringing forward this option that talks about ADUs. So under current Minnesota law, when a homeowner adds an ADU, the increased property value can reduce their homestead market value exclusion, which can lead to higher property taxes. So the bill would change the property tax law so that the value of the accessory dwelling unit is excluded when calculating the homestead market value exclusion. This would take effect in 2027. In practice, you know, if a homeowner was going to build an ADU right now, they're going to lose, some of that room in between the exception. So, you know, the purpose overall that we've talked about a lot recently is just expanding those options across the state. And I think this is one fairly small way. It's not some of our other bills have been pretty impactful, but this is one small way. So that being said, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Co-Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Myers. Appreciate the intent of, I think you're just trying to provide an incentive to produce a kind of home that we don't build enough of, accessory dwelling units that can offer support to address our housing crisis. As I understand the bill, I just want to make sure I understand it. This potentially could provide a benefit to those, tax benefit to those homeowners by reducing their taxable, you know, market value on their home. But essentially, does that by lowering the tax base for those properties, do those taxes shift on to other homeowners or business owners?
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Igo, and thank you, Chair Howard. Yes, it does. A small shift. And I think, and I'm happy to discuss it too, but I mean, the league provided a letter in regards to that. Want to be open, honest, transparent. That's how I do my business down here. So, yes.
I'll say, obviously, we've done our share of work in terms of interaction between state, local governments. It is true from a property tax standpoint that our local governments are experiencing quite a bit of pressures for all kinds of reasons. And so that gives me a little heartburn. I'm just curious, did you consider some sort of tax incentives or things that sort of incentivize the creation of these types of housings? That would be more of a tax expenditure, but in a way that doesn't, shift burden onto other folks.
Yeah. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Howard, for that question. Yes, I think there's multiple opportunities. This is just one. And I think looking at all of those, again, may give some people heartburn. But if we don't have those discussions, we can't figure out what options we can get across the finish line. And I think in a tight legislature, that's what we're trying to do.
I'll just make some closing comments. Thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing the bill forward. It's an interesting proposal. As we've talked a lot about ADUs in this committee, one of the areas when I was doing my research on the bill that would see the biggest gain in support for the homestead exclusion is in that kind of medium affordable starter home value, which is in that $275,000 to $350,000 range. Yes, there's going to be a shift there, but we also need to talk about that if a young family or an old family looks at wanting to build more housing in their community to support family or to support their community, they shouldn't have to take a penalty on their homestead exclusion for helping their community or helping their families. And I think it brings up a really interesting discussion. That's why we're going to lay the bill over today, because this maybe is going to take more work by the committee to look into other things like this. But I think as taxpayers in Minnesota, whether it be property taxes or any taxes you pay, if you're looking to benefit your community, your family, and give a higher standard of life in your community, that should be something that the tax code looks at. So Representative Myers, thank you for the foresight on this and looking into something like this and bringing a new idea to our committee today. And with that, I'll give you final comments.
Yeah, thank you. I was hoping to get this to, chair in front of Chair Gomez, actually, but, we'll continue to work at this. I mean, I'm not afraid, but, I think at the end of the day, something like this in Minneapolis looks very different, and it looks very different in St. Paul, looks very different in Duluth, very different in the suburbs. But these are all opportunities for young teachers, workforce housing, graduate students, and again, just trying to bring some of those options to the table. So I thank you guys for listening to this, and we'll continue working on it.
Thank you, Representative Myers. With that, your bill is laid over. With that, there's nothing left on our agenda, members, so thank you for the discussion today. And with that, we are adjourned.